Good afternoon, everyone. We are speaking to you from a beautiful old room in a celebrated building of the great Middle Prairie Country. A room in Old Main, the historic structure on the campus of Knox College, Galesburg, Illinois. Our National Broadcasting Company microphones are resting now on the ledge of a window. And across this ledge, Abraham Lincoln once stepped as he prepared to deliver one of the most important speeches of his career. Galesburg, Illinois and Knox College were founded coincidentally just about 100 years ago. And today, thousands of townspeople and alumni, old-timers and, yes, old friends, have gathered in Galesburg to indulge in that mellow American custom, an old-fashioned homecoming, and that's exactly what's taking place this beautiful summer day. This observance marks the celebration of the joint centennial of a typical American town and the old Siwash of college legend. You know, the old Siwash means the freshwater college of the Middle West with a liberal arts school. Now, we're going to have two nationally known men speak to you for just a few moments. But first, we'd like to tell you something about this old building. Old Main is a three-story building of the Tudor Gothic architecture with the flying buttresses and the old native red brick of the Prairie West. We know that you can just see it in your mind. And as we stand beside the open window, we look out upon a beautiful green lawn dotted with stately old elm trees. And on this lawn are many thousands of Galesburg centennial visitors assembling for the historic ceremony just about to begin. Now, just outside the window, here at the east end of Old Main, is a platform. And it is an exact duplicate of the one upon which Abraham Lincoln and Stephen A. Douglas stood as they exchanged oratorical argument before some 20,000 people on the afternoon of October 7th, 1858. And it was here, according to the famous Lincoln historian, Mrs. Ida Tarbell, that Lincoln first defined slavery as a moral issue. And here in Galesburg, Lincoln was a familiar local figure. His great top hat with its loose hat band, so that it might hold notepapers and memoranda, a hat band office, as Lincoln called it. Then his characteristic shawl and, of course, his towering height. And because of this Lincoln association and because of its close connection with other features of the American tradition, Old Main, the building from which we greet you today, has been declared a National Historic Site. And in 1935, a special act of Congress authorized the designation of such monuments. And Old Main, here in Galesburg, was one of the first to be so named. You know, in this famous southeast room of Old Main Building, we see many pictures commemorating incidents in Lincoln's life. In fact, just an arm's length from my microphone where we're standing right now is the original old campaign banner, the political standard of Lincoln's party when first he campaigned in 1860 for the presidency of the United States. And all about us in this room is a pictorial and written tribute to this great American of our Civil War days. And Old Main Building is a chief locale of interest, of course, for thousands of distinguished visitors and returning natives of Galesburg today, because the building has just been completely restored for future years of usefulness. The citizens of Galesburg look upon Old Main not only as a historical site, but as they have been telling your announcer this morning in Galesburg City, that they regard the building as a symbol of their local contribution to American tradition. And under these elms in years past have walked such notable Americans as Eugene Field, the poet, Edgar Lee Masters, whose own Spoon River lay a few miles from Galesburg, John Bartlett, the famous writer, Dr. John H. Finley, the present editor-in-chief of the New York Times, who is an alumnus and former president of Knox College, Ernest Elmo Cawkins, nationally known writer, advertising man and author, and author of the Centennial History of Galesburg. Then there is Mrs. Philip Sidney Post of Chicago, chief sponsor of the Old Main Restoration and former dean of women here at Knox College. And by the way, I'd like to tell you that Lincoln was not the only president to visit this historic old town and this national monument. President William McKinley brought his entire cabinet to Galesburg in 1899, 38 years ago, marking the first occasion, we believe, that a presidential cabinet meeting was called to order outside of the White House. Benjamin Harrison, Theodore Roosevelt, we might add that just a few feet from us, in fact, right behind us, is a glass cabinet in which is preserved the original manuscript of a speech given on this campus by President William Howard Taft, honoring a former Lincoln-Douglas observance here in Galesburg. But among the national visiting figures today here in Galesburg for this 1937 centennial celebration is the Honorable John G. Wynum, three times governor of New Hampshire, former head of the Social Security Board and renowned authority on Lincoln's life. Because of his interest in the great emancipator, Governor Wynum has come to Galesburg to participate in today's rededication of his Lincoln Shrine. And ladies and gentlemen, I am certainly pleased to introduce to our NBC audience the Honorable John G. Wynum. Governor Wynum.
Good afternoon. We are gathered here today to dedicate a building in honor of those who brought to the frontier prairie lands of long ago the lifting light of Lincoln. Only a decade before, a Virginia gentleman had scratched across a sheet of paper the inscription that he requested be used to mark his grave. Here was buried Thomas Jefferson, author of the Declaration of American Independence, of the Statute of Virginia for Religious Freedom, and father of the University of Virginia. If a grateful people was to enshrine his memory, it was to be because of what he had contributed to political liberty, to religious tolerance, and to education. The acknowledgement, the interpretation, and the fulfillment of his hope found their being in the life of Abraham Lincoln. The greatest son of Illinois, on his way from Springfield to Washington in 1861, speaking in Independence Hall in Philadelphia, stated quite simply, "I have never had a feeling politically that did not spring from the sentiment embodied in the Declaration of Independence." It was that which gave promise that in due time the weights would be lifted from the shoulders of all men and that all should have an equal chance. And it was here at Galesburg, that he said, "I think the author of that notable instrument meant to set up a standard maximum for a free society which should be familiar to all and revered by all, constantly looked to, constantly labored for, and even though never perfectly attained, constantly approximated, and thereby constantly spreading and deepening its influence and augmenting the happiness and value of life to all people everywhere." It was here at Knox College, close on to 40 years ago, during the 5th series of the Lincoln-Douglas joint debate, that there was brought into the drama of a single public occasion the great essentials of the democratic processes of government. The place was an institution of learning, the debates educational in value, requiring the right of free speech, the right of peaceful assembly, and a free press, carried the argument beyond the college campus. The discussion had to do with the inalienable rights of man, habeas corpus, trial by jury, the proper relation of the executive, the legislative, and the judicial branches of government. Douglas had charged that Lincoln had defied the Supreme Court of the United States in his statement on the Dred Scott decision, and asked bluntly, and I quote from Douglas's speech, delivered here that day, "Why this attempt then to bring the Supreme Court into disrepute among the people?" He further charged that Lincoln is going to appeal from the Supreme Court of the United States to every town meeting in the hope that he can excite a prejudice against that court. Lincoln opposed the Dred Scott decision because it would have permitted the extension of slavery into the free territories of the United States. And here also at Galesburg was repeated the statement that Lincoln made against the advice of his friend, which many felt cost him the election to the United States Senate. "A house divided against itself cannot stand. I believe this government cannot endure permanently half slaves and half free. I do not expect the Union to be dissolved. I do not expect the house to fall, but I do expect it will cease to be divided. It will become all one thing or the other. Again, the challenge has come to us. Along the way of progress, new problems have arisen. New solutions are necessary to protect the individual and the common welfare. Tolerance and understanding are sometimes wanting. Perhaps you who are younger, remembering the words of him whom we would honor today, may in your generation so touch the better angels of our nature that a selfless patriotism may guide and guard us in the years ahead. A house divided against itself cannot stand. A government with one third of its people, ill-fed, ill-clothed, and ill-housed, cannot permanently continue. We do not expect the house to fall, but we do expect it will cease to be divided on this basis. We believe that the opportunity of health and decency are within the rights of every family in the land. Those who worship mere success with no vision of a more generous future for all people, whether in Lincoln's time or in our own day, forgot the great promise of American life, that living liberty and the pursuit of happiness had been the concern of government from our beginning. It was while standing before St. Gordon's statue of Lincoln that Franklin K. Lane translated into words the beauty and the strength that gave line and depth to the work of a great artist. I never passed through Chicago without visiting the statue of Lincoln by St. Gordon and standing before it for a moment uncovered. It is to me all that America is, physically and spiritually. I look at those long arms and long legs, large hands and feet, and I think that they represent the physical strength of this country, its power and its youthful awkwardness. Then I look up at the head and see qualities which have made the American, the strong chin, the noble brow, those sober and steadfast eyes. They were the eyes of one who saw with sympathy and interpreted with common sense. They were the eyes of earnest idealism, limited and checked by the possible and the practicable. They were the eyes of a truly humble spirit whose ambition was not a love of power, but a desire to be supremely useful. They were eyes of compassion and mercy and a deep understanding. They saw far more than they looked at. They believed in far more than they saw. They loved men not for what they were, but for what they might become. They were patient eyes, eyes that could wait and wait and live on in the faith that right would win. They were eyes which challenged the nobler things in men and brought out the hidden largeness. They were humorous eyes that saw things in their true proportions and in their real relationships. They looked through cant and pretense and the great and little vanities of great and little men. They were the eyes of an unflinching courage and an unfaltering faith, rising out of a sincere dependence upon the master of the universe. To believe in Lincoln is to learn to look through Lincoln's eyes. May those who love this prairie and cherish its great traditions continue to look through Lincoln's eyes.
Thank you, sir. You have just listened to our first speaker of this afternoon, the Honorable John G. Wynot, 3 times governor of New Hampshire, who spoke to you today on Lincoln's life. 2 railroads and 4 main highways leading into Galesburg today have led throngs of people gathered just outside our windows, returning for the celebration to Old Main and Knox campus and to Galesburg for its centennial observation. And none feels, should we say, more deeply the thrill of homecoming than one of Galesburg's most distinguished sons, a native of the town and a man who loves the Middle West Prairie with a deep affection. Many critics have called him America's greatest living poet. He walked these streets, saw this building as a boy. His name is Carl Sandburg. Mr. Sandburg.
Old and tarnished is the saying, time is a great teacher. Many here today feel that if Old Main of Knox as a living structure could speak for itself, it might say, I too am a child of time. I celebrate the dignity, importance, and pathos of time. Time used me with sun and rain, wind and frost, rust and rust, till I was falling away. Unless loving and thoughtful hands had come to help me, I would have prepared to vanish and become dust in the wind. A shattered form and a forgotten melody, a house melted into thin shadows. Here to my doors have come the feet, faces, and voices of the young. Here from my windows, generations of the young gazed out on the world, gaze in on themselves, some asking questions. How and why do we live? And while we live, what is worth looking at? What is worth listening to? What might be worth dying for? Shoes have worn my door sills, sleeves smoothed and softened my banisters. laughter tumbled along my hallways. Human associations making me across the years. Yes, old names could tell today of the workings of time, how time keeps the secret, how time translates practices and institutions of one age into programs and establishments yet to be tried under hammers and tested on anvils. How time is a destroyer, yet a grower and a healer, too. How there is no answer to some questions unless in the ancient saying, time will tell. Those Knox pioneers of 1837, the year Abraham Lincoln moved from the village of New Salem to begin law practice in the city of Springfield, how could the fog, the mist, the faint cross lights of the future, how could they know they were a fated bridge generation? Who could tell them they were moving from a society of farmers and land culture into a machine age where the claims of a new system of industry, transportation, finance, and its owners and controllers would bring a changed national picture? The shrewdest foreteller among them, in the somber chaos of nearly 20 years later, in his house-divided speech, was to say, if we could first know where we are and whither we are tending, we could better judge what to do and how to do it. In the sciences of chemistry and physics, then, were pioneers, restless as any on the western prairies, beginning to perform the impossible, things that until done they were told couldn't be done. Whether you pressed inward to the American mind or outward on the flow of the huge, diverse American landscape, you found personal ambition and greed mixed with love and sacrifice, interwoven with the tantalizing and indefinable American dream. Was a humanity older than Shakespeare, older than the Bible, trying to arrange a new human scheme for the old world to look at and be glad over? Many said so. Many said just that. It had wonder and mystery. Many who could not explain it at all were ready to die for it. Time, during this inscrutable drama, sent fresh generations of young men and women into the doorways of old Maine. Sent its boy students out into the agony of the war of the 1860s. Saw the plains and valleys to the Pacific filled with networks of human settlements and rails and wires. Saw its boy students step forth into the first great world war. Saw the machine age blend into the motor and power age. Saw a national and world economic collapse bring questions in weight and consequence the parallel of the issues threshed out by Lincoln and Douglas in front of old Maine here before 20,000 people on a raw, windy October day 75 years ago. Now the pilots of the night air mail look down on lighted cities struggling with systems of human culture perhaps more complex and variable than any the Earth has ever seen. And these pilots of the night air mail, are they not pioneers as truly as the Pony Express riders of the old days? Because the frontier in the free land is gone, are we to lose the word pioneer? Hard as the wood of an old ox yoke, homely as a one-room log cabin, fierce as famine, flies, and vermin, tough and stubborn as men and plows breaking unbroken sod, mystic as rainbow lights on horizons not yet reached by man. Engineers and inventors harnessing invisible brute forces to do the heavy and brass back-breaking work formerly done by man. Are they not pioneers? Shall we say across the next 100 years there will not be more pioneers making headway favoring human solidarity as against war and strife among nations and men? Making headway on the conditions to exist between ownership, management, and labor. Winning changes toward better terms on which human beings shall live. Yes, there will be generations taking hold as though loneliness and the genius of struggle have always dwelt in the hearts of
pioneers. As though the restless and venturing human spirit shall perform again tomorrow with exploits today declared visionary and impossible. What the young people want and dream across the next 100 years will shape history more than any other motivation to be named. Youth now living and youth as yet unborn hold the seeds and secrets of the folds to be unfolded in the shapes to come. None shall look back on this hour and say, we here did not have hope and faith. The mystery of justice between man and man, nation and nation, shall take on new phases. Dreamers of deep dreams, finders and welders, sons and daughters of burning quests shall come. In plain work done with honesty, in actions of courage and endurance, lighted with inner humility, lighted sometimes with a fine balance of motives as between freedom and discipline, they shall clothe human dignity with new and wider meaning. Old Maine, as a living instrument today, might be saying, one thing I know deep out of my time. Youth, when lighted and alive and given a sporting chance, is strong for struggle and not afraid of any toils or punishment or dangers or death. What shall be the course of society and civilization across the next 100 years? For the answers, read if you can the strange and baffling eyes of youth. Yes, read if you can. Strange and baffling eyes of youth.
Thank you, sir. You have just listened to Mr. Carl Sandburg, one of the best-known men in the country in poetic fields. Just reading to you today his ode that he has written in honor of this anniversary celebration in Galesburg, Illinois, and for the ceremonies now taking place at Knox University campus here in Galesburg. The audience just outside the window has risen to its feet as the organ peals out the old strains of a beautiful hymn. And just 3 blocks away, looking down between the elms and down a foliage-lined path, we see an academic procession proceeding from historic Beecher Chapel, which is across the main lawn of the campus, 3 blocks away, following a band. Delegates in this procession representing several scores colleges and universities from all over America. They're going to observe the beautiful ceremony of unlocking the door to Old Main Building, which will follow the dedicatory ceremonies for the building. And this unlocking of the door will signal the approach of another 100 years as the first century turns and swinging into the second century of service and educational service to the youth of America and to the youth of this particular community. Now, looking up to this window, we might mention earlier in the program today that Mr. Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln, before he was president, stepped across this window ledge to meet Stephen A. Douglas in one of those historic debates. And how true that was, we can just see that picture as we stand by the window ledge at the present time. And when Mr. Lincoln stepped through this window ledge, he faced the largest crowd of people that he had faced in his career up to that date, a crowd of some 20,000 people.
And it was there that he was making one of his first impressions as a great leader of men and as a man with foresight into the future of his country. Perhaps you can hear with our microphones now, located outside of this window also, the tolling of the bell, the famous old college victory bell, which rings after every athletic victory that Siwash has. And this bell, too, is ringing in the turn of the century in the matter of service and educational service for this country. This program has come to you from the Knox College campus and from Galesburg, Illinois, through the National Broadcasting Company.